Lose the Cape Podcast, episode 140. This episode of the podcast is sponsored by the newest Lose the Cape book, which is launching on June 26th of 2018. Lose the Cape Ain't Nothing But a Teen Thing. This book digs deep into what it is like to be raising a tween or teen in the 2018 environment. So we have pulled together a bunch of essays from parents, and we're going to be interviewing one of those parents today, Jennifer Rosenhines. This is also an episode dedicated to, I guess the easiest way to put it is to gun safety and talking about gun violence and common sense measures to try and keep the world a safer place for our children. June 2nd, 2018 is National Wear Orange Day in support of trying to reduce gun violence, and we are doing all that we can. Jennifer made the perfect guest for that because not only is she a hilarious writer, she is also a very active mother in the Moms Demand Action movement. So if this is an organization that you're not familiar with, or that you maybe have thought about participating in but don't really know what they do or how to get involved, this is a great episode to talk about that. What this is not is a political argument over whether or not we should have guns. It is purely based on our discussion as moms about safety and what's happening in schools with our kids and ways that we can try and make the world a safer place for them and for all of us. So we hope you'll listen in. We hope you'll join the discussion. And I look forward to hearing your feedback on this episode. You can get all the show notes and access any of the links that we discuss on this at losethecape.com/podcast/140. Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Lose the Cape podcast. I'm your host, Alexa Bigwarf, here with my sidekick and co-host, Nancy Cavallones. We are really pleased to bring you another contributor to the Lose the Cape Ain't Nothing But a Teen Thing, Jen Rosenhines. Do you go by both, or do you just go by Hines? I was like,
no,
oh,
okay. I go by both.
Okay, good. I got that right. Jen is a blogger, a mother, a funny writer, and we're going to get into her essay, but she is more than that. She's also a leader of her local Moms Demand Action organization, which, mm-hmm. if you're not familiar with, is an organization set up by moms to help provide a very common sense route to helping us reduce the violence and the problems that our children are having because of improperly used and stored weapons, basically. And you will know all about Moms Demand Action and how you can get involved by the end of it. So let me read your bio really quickly. Jennifer Rosenhines has been accused as having the maturity of a 9-year-old boy because of her love of poop and fart jokes. She lives in Madison, Wisconsin, and works for the parenting website Scary Mommy. Now, I know everybody's heard of Scary Mommy that listens to our podcast. So she is a recovering MFA and an award-winning poet and blogger. Follow her at the-thinking-mom.blogspot.com. You have held on to the blogspot domain, huh?
I have always 10 million different things going on, so that's probably not my most active place. My most active place is always on Facebook, so.
Absolutely. So, well, first of all, thank you so much for being a part of our podcast and a part of our anthology. We're really excited about it. If you haven't been listening to us as we've been promoting the launch of this book, which is on June 26th, which is less than a month from now. By the time this goes live, it'll be like 2 weeks from now. So we're super excited. But it's a really fun look into the lives of parents who are all of a sudden like raising tweens and teens and are like, oh crap, how did we get here? So Carrie and I started Lose the Cape, the first book, Realities from Busy Modern Moms and Strategies to Survive, when our kids were like 6 and below. They were all young. They were really small kids. And as we've grown up with them and entered into this new stage of life, we found there were few books of this nature for tweens and teens and parents. So it's funny stories. It's
It's emotional stories, it's advice, it's just here's why we made these types of decisions. It's, I mean, hilariousness, it's advice from experts. It's, I think, a very eclectic and amazing book of stories for parents who are getting ready to enter into this very different zone of parenting.
Oh, yeah.
So now your story is hilarious. About your son and getting armpit hair. Do you want to tell us a little bit about, without telling everybody all the story, because we want them to go buy the book.
Absolutely. Please go buy the book now.
Right, exactly.
This is the book you should buy. I think it's, I don't know how other people who are boy moms feel, but, or moms of boys, I should say, because I also have a daughter. When you head towards puberty, you're like, well, my puberty was a totally different thing from what it's like to mature in the body of a boy. And the good news is that my kid has a sense of humor and I have a sense of humor. So we take it kind of as like a day by day discovery. And I have much less emotional baggage somehow about a boy hitting puberty than a girl hitting puberty.
Right.
You know, I don't know about you, but I think I spent like most of my puberty either crying or pining or cursing, you know, or hiding.
Right.
Those were kind of my menu of options. And so it's really interesting to experience it through his body and his experience. And, you know, as a mom, you don't want to be like, hey, dude, can I always check your armpit? Like, you know, where are we in the development of your body? But at the same time, you kind of want to know where your kid is and what they're going through so that you can, you know, not just, you know, talk to them, but you can help them through it. So it's an interesting time where there's a disconnect between them actually needing you more, kind of emotionally, but at the same time, them needing space and them needing privacy and things like that. So, you know, we kind of discovered the hair at the same time.
The hair.
There was one hair. And it was like that long.
For those of you who can't see this, it's like 2 inches.
Oh, so sorry.
A mammoth hair.
Yes, a mammoth hair. It was, you think about hair growing in and you don't have the experience. You don't remember the experience of getting hair. Like hair is just all of a sudden there. And as a middle-aged woman, hair, you know, some of us start getting this or getting this or fighting that. All of a sudden, one day you look and it's there. And so we had that experience together of discovering this hair. And it was an epic and momentous moment and something I don't think either of us will forget.
It's so funny because my oldest is a boy. I have my oldest is a boy and then followed by 2 girls. And I swear he's been hairy since he was born. My husband's family, they're just very hairy creatures. And I think he started getting armpit hair when he was like 7.
Oh my God.
One hair, like hair. And it's crazy. He's maybe he was 8, maybe, but it was young. I remember thinking, oh my gosh. It came in and then just kind of stopped. So it's not like he's continued to just become this little woolly mammoth the whole time. But
he doesn't have like a little troll under his
arm. Oh my gosh. He's a hairy little dude. But, you know, now he goes in there, but it's a scary time for me. I mean, I laughed so hard. My younger sister has a son the same age and she's like, she told me, I laughed so hard. We're from a family of girls. And she told me that she explained to her son what a wet dream was. And I was like, oh my gosh, how did you have that conversation? I don't think I could do that.
No, it's, you know, and of course, like all the parenting books these days tell you, like, you're supposed to use the correct terminology for everything.
Oh my gosh.
Because like, that's not awkward.
Right, exactly.
You know, and the whole thing is just really fraught. I remember, I don't know about you and your state, but my son, we live in Wisconsin. And so he started getting human growth and development, which is what they call sex ed, in 5th grade. Uh-huh. And, you know, every day he would come home just like horrified. I would be like, how is human growth and development? And he would be like, don't talk to me. I don't want to talk to you about this. He was just like utterly frustrated and disgusted. And then one day it was his birthday. And so I went to go take donuts to his class, and I knocked on the door. And one of these kids opens the door, and the room is quiet and the lights are out in there. And I'm like, what the heck is going on? And I just kind of come in with my personality and I'm like, hey, I'm Max's mom. And the kid says, oh, we're right in the middle of human growth and development. And I was like, hey, kids.
See you later.
I said, I'm here to deliver donuts and talk to you about sex. And my son goes, Mom! And bangs it against the desk. Kids are staring at me like, what the hell? And I dropped the donuts and I said, have fun, kids, and walked out. And my son like did not make eye contact with me for like 4 days. But I thought, you know, this is, you gotta have fun with it and you gotta laugh about it. Because otherwise it becomes a taboo thing and then you can't talk about it.
And that's how that's the approach my husband takes. He just laughs his way through everything and makes up funny jokes, and my son laughs, but it really does take the edge off of it. And the fact that we're able to have that conversation about things that I know we need to talk about, but I would really rather not, at least when it's funny, you know. But
yeah,
I think that for me, it's like, it's really difficult to imagine some of the specific questions that may arise. So arise,
yay,
no pun intended.
Yeah, well, puns happen.
I mean, my oldest is a girl, she's 9, and I can already tell that like with her, I'm not going to be able to like be funny because she's just so like self-conscious and uptight. But my son, who's 4, we'll see. I mean, he's kind of a goofball, so I don't know. I'll just let my husband handle it, probably.
You know, the interesting thing is I think it's easier for me to talk to my son. I think I have more baggage with a girl. Like,
yeah.
We went to the pediatrician, and the pediatrician started to say to her, well, you're 9, so same age as your daughter. And the pediatrician started to say, well, kids are already having these changes. And I'm like,
no,
I cannot. People are like, be body positive. And I'm like, I'm trying so hard. But it's,
yeah. I just have some like American Girl books that I'm just going to give her when she starts asking questions.
They are maturing faster. They are being exposed to things faster. And then to swing it completely in a different direction, like they have fears and things that are happening to them in the real world that are very adult in nature, like worrying about if they're going to die when they go to school every day. So to take it from a funny perspective about talking about sex to the other topic that I really want to cover while we have Jen's attention, and that is just the problem with the violence in our schools and how we as moms, I'm going to try not to be political about this because mm-hmm. We make this an environment where all moms can feel non-judged as much mm-hmm. as possible. But, you know, to me, my personal opinion here is that if you're a mom and you have a kid, gun safety should be a concern to you, period.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And if it's not, maybe, you know, I don't know how it can't be. I mean, it just continues to happen over and over, not just in high schools, but obviously in elementary schools and middle schools and colleges across the board. And I just recently attended my niece's high school graduation in Florida, about an hour away from Parkland. And, you know, there were armed police officers, not just with your normal handguns, but with mm-hmm. rifles. And my son said, as we walked by, he was like, wow, is that a real gun? And I said, I assure you, it's not fake. And the cop looked at us and he was like, we're just here to keep you and your family safe so that you can, you know, have a day of celebration instead of a day of mourning. And I was like, oh my gosh, how sad is it that we have to have that disclaimer? And I asked my sister-in-law about it later and if that was becoming the norm at Florida events. And she's like, I'm going to be honest with you. I was terrified the entire graduation ceremony. And my niece said the same thing. She said, I was just waiting for it to happen. And at the end, they dropped balloons and kids started stomping on them. And they were like, she said she freaked out. She didn't know what was happening when she heard some of the balloons popping at first. And I'm like, what a sad environment now that we can't even enjoy a high school graduation ceremony without checking out all around us to see who might be the one who's going to, you know, decide to make his day of glory. I say his because it's normally his, but it could be a girl.
I mean, it like just informs like everything. Like I, Jen, I live about 15 minutes from Sandy Hook. So right after Sandy Hook, me and a lot of other parents were having like conversations like, how do we send our kids over to somebody's house for a play date if we don't know if the parents own a gun or if they're being responsible about owning the gun? Do we ask them first if they have guns in the house? And if they say yes, then
it's an uncomfortable conversation.
Do we say, like, what are you supposed to say after that? No, I'm not sending my kid to your house. Or do you have to, like, do, like, a whole inquisition about, well, where do you keep your guns? Where are they? And then, like, the solution that my sister and I arrived at with that was just to focus on helping our kids make decisions when they're confronted in a situation like that. And so we told them that if you're at a friend's house and you see a gun, run.
Yeah.
Leave the room.
Let's back up just a second here. I'm sure you probably want to address like the Be Smart organization and all that stuff that Moms Demand Action has partnered with. But can you, for anybody who has been living under a rock, doesn't know what Moms Demand Action is, can you tell us a little bit about the organization, how you got involved, and what the and clear up some of the myths about what it is that this organization is trying to achieve?
Absolutely. So Moms Demand Action is a non-political organization. We don't ascribe to any particular political ideology. There are Democrats, Republicans, Independents, you know, people who switch between things. And we are all interested in gun safety. And, you know, there's this common conception or misconception, I should rather say, that people who are interested in this issue are all somehow anti-Second Amendment. And that is not the case with this organization. We have a lot of responsible gun owners, people who used or use weapons in the military, people who are police officers, lots of different people, gun owners, non-gun owners, who are coming together to say, we need to move this forward. We need to make some changes. And the difference between our organization and maybe some of the rhetoric people have heard online about guns, because everybody's got an opinion and everybody's going to tell you their opinion, is that our approaches are all research-based. And by research, we mean peer-reviewed research that comes from, you know, researchers who are at accredited institutions, and where there is a consensus among the scientific community that the data is being interpreted in the correct way. So we are really looking for solutions. We are not necessarily tied to any kind of dogma other than the dogma of wanting to protect our kids, wanting to protect our families, wanting to cut down on the gun violence that we see, you know, across this country. Over 100 people a day lose their lives to gun violence.
Wow.
Just a few years ago, it was only 94 people a day in the United States. So that within a very short period of time, we've seen a spike in gun violence in here we're not talking about just, you know, mass shootings, which tend to get the headlines. We're also talking about domestic violence. We're also talking about self-inflicted wounds, you know, because suicide is a severe problem. And 90% of the time when someone attempts suicide with a handgun, they are successful. Okay. Whereas 90% of the time, if you try to kill yourself by other means, you will survive. Okay, so we really want to make sure that fewer people are obviously hurting themselves or others with guns. And then that, you know, we are addressing some of the other underlying issues, but you can't ignore guns.
No, you can't.
You can't ignore them. And anyone who wants to tell you that guns are not the issue, they are throwing away a part of the solution. Nobody here is saying we don't have issues with mental health care and delivery of mental health services, counseling, education, supportive families, all those kinds of things. No one is saying that there's not a problem with so many things in this country. However, when you compare us to other countries that are similar in terms of economics and, you know, ethnic makeup, those kinds of things, you are 25, we are 25 times more likely to die wow. in this country by gun than wow. someone in a similar country. So, and the main differentiator is not that we have higher rates of depression or anxiety. We have similar kinds of problems to other nations of our size and of our economy. The difference is access to firearms.
Absolutely.
So, but it's important to say that, you know, the Second Amendment exists and has been established as the rule of law in this country. The interpretation of the Second Amendment has changed over time. But people who say that there's some kind of slippery slope that women like myself, you know, sitting in my little suburban house here, that we are trying to overturn the Second Amendment, it's kind of an absurd argument. If you Google what would it take to overturn an amendment to the Constitution, right. you will see that not only is the bar terribly high for doing that, but that there is no way that we are anywhere close to consensus in this country about overturning the Second Amendment. It's not going to happen.
Right.
But the Second Amendment doesn't say that you can't make reasonable gun laws.
Right.
That help to keep guns out of the hands of people who shouldn't have them, like domestic abusers. We know that domestic abuse and abuse of animals are the two warning signs that someone might commit a mass shooting event. So, you know, these are things we know. They're things we've known for a long time. So we really want to cut through the rhetoric and really talk about solutions.
I think for me, one of the most frustrating things has been, beyond the slippery slope argument, mm-hmm. just the idea that people, that mothers, that women who are often the victim of, if someone's going to die from a domestic violence event, it's going to be a woman. It's frustrating, usually. It's frustrating to me that women and that mothers can't more globally come together and say, this is a problem. There are solutions that, that are feasible without coming head to head with major blockages, largely from organizations with more money mm-hmm. and, you know, things of that nature. So I don't know. I think that there's probably a lot of people like me who feel like the problem is so big and mm-hmm. they can't do anything about it, mm-hmm. which is why I think a grassroots action group like Moms Demand Action is a great place to get started. You can join them anywhere, right?
Right. So we have chapters in all 50 states, and in fact, there may be a meeting or there may be a group in your local area. So I am the Madison group lead from Madison, Wisconsin. And since the Parkland shooting, we have gone from 7 groups in the state of Wisconsin to 22. So we are all over the state. If you look in the state of Texas, you know, places that you would consider being very immersed in gun culture, there are many, many women. Men also can be moms, quote unquote. You don't have to be a mother of a child in order to be a part of our organization. It was just a movement that was started by women who were concerned about the safety, their safety and the safety of their children. So, you know, the thing is that this is true in a lot of ways, that women, we give birth to children. That's no easy feat. We are oftentimes primary caregivers for children. We all know that that's a super challenging role. We can do really hard things. We really can. And we need to have the confidence to say that our children's lives are something that us mama bears, we're not going to give up easily. We are not going to say, well, just because this is a big problem, that we can't be a part of the solution. And that's the great part about this organization is that because it is so research-based, you really can learn that sometimes there are ways to go about talking about something that can clear up misconceptions. Uh-huh. There are certain kinds of things that most of us, even people who are card-carrying NRA members, can agree with and do agree. Yeah. But we are being sold a false bill of goods, yep, that we are more divided than we are.
Right.
And there's lots of public opinion polling out there that also suggests we are not as divided as we think we are. And part of the strategy of people who don't want to see different laws passed, their strategy is to divide us, mm-hmm, by telling us we are not powerful, we are alone, and there's no solving this problem.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of where I was going with, I got distracted by the warning on Zoom popping up there, but like, is that they are winning at the division side, I think. The other organizations are winning, mm-hmm, at dividing people and by putting out all this rhetoric that makes people believe it's a problem that's too hard to solve. So instead of trying to solve it, let's just, you know, go on with our merry way. That's a hard thing to work through. But I think that's one of the things that I really like about what Moms Demand Action has been doing is by creating all of these programs, like collaborating with Be Smart, which goes back to what Nancy was talking, mm-hmm, about, how to have those conversations with your kids. To me, that takes all the controversy out of it. It's not saying we're judging you for having a gun or you can't have a gun, but it's saying we recognize this is a world where they exist. So, mm-hmm, it's our job as mothers to do as much as we can to protect our kids, to educate your kids. And what I like about the besmart.org is that they have like checklists and planning tools and recommend that you talk about gun safety just as you would fire safety. So you would have a fire plan, escape plan from your home. Have a plan for what your children are going to do if they're at someone's house with and you know what they can say or do, how to respond, how to protect themselves and what to do. And I think that's so important. Just, we have that conversation with my 11-year-old son a lot. I'm in South Carolina. Everybody has a gun. Everybody, mm-hmm, and their grandmother probably have 15 guns. So, right, you know, it's really a conversation that has to be had on, absolutely, a regular basis. It's
absolutely,
he plays these violent video games where the soldiers get shot up and then they come back to life. And I'm like, you have to understand that that is not reality. And if someone shoots you in the head, you're not coming back ever.
Right. Right. Well, you know, and this is an interesting thing about the Moms Be Smart program, because it's essentially, it's a 30-minute talk that one of our volunteers goes in and does for any group who's interested in learning more about it. So we do it for PTOs and PTAs. We do it at churches, you know, anywhere where there's a gathering of people who are interested in it. We'll even do like house parties where we'll go in and we'll say, okay, invite your girlfriends over and we'll talk about it. Mm-hmm. And part of what we all need to do is to really shift our mindset about what it means to keep our kids safe. And, you know, as you were saying, you know, talking to your kids about if there's a gun that gets introduced, you know, say that they're over at their friend's house and their friend takes out a gun and starts playing with it, which happens.
Mm-hmm. A lot.
This happens. Yeah. If you
Don't try to like convince your friend to put the gun down. Don't just get the hell out.
Yeah. Well, really the thing is that we don't ever want it to come to that situation, right? We don't want our kids to be having to make those decisions if it's possible. And there is a certain amount of peer pressure that goes on. Sure. You know, what happens when somebody does something or says something that you don't like and you're kind of frozen in it? You know, and so part of what we say with moms is that it is a parent's responsibility to keep their kids safe.
Right.
And because of that, the onus is on us to have the hard conversations. Now, I know that's not always possible. I mean, I have a daughter who likes to be very free range. And, you know, we've had situations where we can't find her and she's in a neighbor's house. You know, luckily, we've kind of gotten past that stage, but, you know, kids aren't perfect little human beings. Heck, adults aren't. So we have to make some decisions for our children that, you know, our understanding of where they are developmentally. Yeah. So, you know, my child now knows that she is not supposed to go into a house where I have not spoken to the adults before, and where I have not given my okay. You know,
that's just smart on a numerous levels.
absolutely. And that's not to say that she always, you know, we've had some situations where she didn't do that. And we've talked about the consequences afterwards. But, you know, it doesn't make sense to scare kids unnecessarily because there is a whole kind of psychic terror that I feel like kind of builds up with them hearing about all these shootings. And that's not something that I, you know, want to impart in my child because let's be honest, we have seen with these mass shooting events that if something happens, there is no guarantee of anything. Yeah. There is no guarantee that one behavior is going to save them or kill them. You know, there is so much unpredictability about it. So the question is, what can we take control of? And we can take control of the adult conversations that we have.
One thing that I was thinking about was when I was in high school, I went to Israel. And in Israel, everybody has a handgun. But they also have the lowest rate of injury or deaths by handgun, which means that it's very much a cultural thing. And then when I think about the things in our own country that we thought we would never be able to change, but then we had a sweeping kind of like cultural change. Like if you think about how unusual it is now to go into a restaurant and people are smoking. Like that doesn't happen anymore.
Completely illegal.
Right? You know, but that was like a huge, but there was like a huge tobacco lobby. That was like a huge cultural shift. Mm-hmm. Even just like getting people to put their seatbelts on in a car was a huge cultural shift. So I feel like, you know, that gun reform and gun safety will happen. It's just going to be another huge cultural shift, and we're getting there.
Yeah, it's got to be, I really love the fact that you pulled out that metaphor of smoking or of seatbelts, because really what we are talking about when we're talking about guns and gun safety is a public health issue.
Yeah.
And this needs to be treated like a public health issue. It is a public health issue. And in such, what is political is the way that people want to manipulate the discussion and control the discussion of it. Yeah. But the instances of gun violence in and of themselves are not a political issue. They are a health issue. So I do agree with you that it is something that is coming. And certainly our organization didn't exist before Sandy Hook. It was started by a mom of five kids in Indianapolis in her living room on Facebook, and now has turned into an organization that has more members than the NRA. So in 5 years, you have already seen a sea change of people like myself who have said, you know what? This is my issue. Uh-huh. Would I rather be making poop jokes on the internet? You betcha. I would like to go back to making poop jokes on the internet. Thank you very much. But until the point in time that this issue has, we've made real headway on this, this is my important work to do. It's not necessarily work I love doing, but it's important somebody does it. And if not me, who, if not now, when? And we really need to come to that point where every mom says, this is my thing.
I think we're getting there. I think Nancy hit it right on where it's a cultural shift. And I think it just takes a little bit of time for people to realize. I think it takes a couple of laws to get passed for people to say, okay, we were able to ban high capacity magazines and nobody lost their weapons in their house or whatever, you know, for people right. to see a few things happen that are, as we like to say, common sense, that, you know, we're not stripping anyone of their rights by making the age to procure weapons to be a little bit higher or requiring right. that people have to go through at least as much to get a gun as they do to get a driver's license or
Sudafed. You
know, or Sudafed. Exactly. I'm telling you what, I have a child with ADHD and it is so much harder for me to get his medication every month than it is. I could go buy a gun every day here. And it's sometimes like the hoops that we have to jump through to get his medication are insane. But I do want to go back to something that you said a minute ago, which I think is so true. And that's the whole, what are we doing to the mental health of our current, of our children right now by making them go through these drills and by, unfortunately, I agree with you that the conversation needs to be had amongst adults, but I also know what the culture is here and my mm-hmm. count. And for me, it has to be a conversation with my kids about you do not, of scaring them really. On the other hand, I also believe that they need to be taught gun safety and they need to know how to handle a weapon because they're so prevalent and all of that stuff. But what I hate, and I hate this, is that my five-year-old has to go to school and practice drills to get away from the bad guy. I hate that with more than anything in the world. And, we had this conversation not too long ago. She came home from school and she was like, guess what, mommy? And I'm thinking, she's all excited. I'm thinking, what did you do at school today? And she was like, I was the first one to the hill. And I'm like, what do you mean you were the first one to the hill? And she said, we did this practice today where if there's a bad guy that comes into our school, we have to run out this door and run as fast as we can to the hill. And I was the first one both times. And I was like, well, by God, you go, girl. If you're going to, you know, if this is the world you're going to grow up with, always be the first to the hill.
Run.
I'm like, run. Don't worry about your friends. Don't worry. And she's like, but if a bad guy comes, I'm going to kick him first. And I'm like, oh, no, you're not. Oh, no, you're not. You're going to run. You're going
to run. Run to the hills, literally.
A little vigilante.
But I mean, but like that story always makes me like well up. Like I have tears in my, because I think about like the first time that I was in my daughter's classroom when they did a lockdown drill.
Gosh.
And it was just like so much more emotional than I thought it would be. It was right after Sandy Hook. She was my first, you know, kid in school. She was in kindergarten. I was volunteering in her classroom. And all the kids were like hiding under the teacher's desk. She like crawled into my lap because she was scared. And I like just the sight of like 25-year-olds being so quiet.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's terrifying.
It is. It's terrifying. Let me speak to what you were talking about, Alexa. I'm not saying that we shouldn't talk to our kids. Absolutely. Sure. We absolutely need to. And one of the amazing things about the Be Smart program is it kind of walks you through and helps you to practice what does it mean to have a conversation.
Right.
And I think that, you know, speaking for myself, I was preaching it before I was doing it, because I was like, okay, well, you know, I need to tell everybody to do this and this is important. And then realizing, okay, well, then I have to do it myself. And my heart starts beating and I'm like, what's going to happen? And I actually sat here like a moron on my couch talking to myself, going through situations like, okay, if the person, if I ask, hey, I wanted to know, you know, I know my kid's coming over. I just wanted to know if you have any guns in the home. I always ask before my, I send my kid over, you know, and I'm playing through these horror scenarios in my head of like the person being like, yeah, what's your, why do you even ask? What's your business? Right. And what I realized was what other people's reactions are not my problem.
Right.
So yeah. I can be nonchalant about it. I can say, you know, even though I don't own guns, I do understand that other people do. Mm-hmm. You know, I live in a state where lots of people do deer hunting. It's a traditional activity. You know, other people may feel that they need guns for their protection. I don't feel that way. But the reality is that there are going to be people who are going to say yes, that I never would have thought have weapons in their home. Uh-huh. And so I would rather have that conversation. If somebody acts defensively, then I already know this is not somebody where I feel comfortable sending my kid.
Right.
Because a responsible gun owner would say, yes, we do have weapons. Here's how we have them secured.
Right. Yeah. So I had to have two very uncomfortable conversations. And I don't know that they were uncomfortable conversations in the big scheme of things. They were uncomfortable for me because I'm a very, believe it or not, I'm a very non-controversial, passive aggressive, like I don't like to make people upset or, you know, but I mean, a childcare provider that we use, I had seen from Facebook, she talks a lot about her concealed weapons carry thing and, and to a place where my toddler is going to be spending time, I had to know, you know? And then, but I had a much easier conversation. It's easier when you already know that people are kind of on the same page with you. Like I knew that my neighbor, who's a good friend of mine and feels the same way about weapons as I do, but her husband felt that it was time that they had a handgun in their home, because of crime rates and, you know, whatever, that's their right. And, but I just asked, you know, I know he's got this now. What, and before I even asked the question, she was like, it's in a safe. I don't even know the code. So, you know, it's his deal. It's his thing. It's locked up. I made sure of it. So, you know, I think a lot of responsible gun owners will not feel, if I chose to have a weapon in the home, I don't think I would feel offended by another parent asking me, because as a parent, your child's safety is your number one priority.
Right.
And I think if we just take that approach and say, you know, they're not, you know, however you want to phrase it. And I do like the fact that it had, that there are those like role playing, as silly as role playing feels to a lot of us, it helps to practice what you're going to say.
Absolutely does. And the other thing that I'll say is that there are methods of doing it that are very kind of like, I won't say under the radar, but
low key.
That are low key, that are easier to kind of hide behind, so to speak. So we had a neighbor and my daughter was going over to their house and I really didn't know them. They're kind of kitty corner. And I sent him a text message and I said, hey, I'm so glad our daughters are playing. I just wanted to let you know when your daughter comes over here that we don't have any weapons in the home.
Very smart.
So to start with myself.
Uh-huh.
And then to say, and I also wanted to ask you if you have weapons in the home and if so, how they're stored. So like I encoded all of that information in a very friendly little text. It went off. It came back. He said that he was in the military and he has very strong beliefs about guns in the home and that they don't have a weapon here. They do have a shotgun that's in their cabin and it is locked and it's never, you know, here. Yeah. And so that was my first experience of somebody actually saying yes. And it was like the least confrontational thing. So then
well,
I was
there you go. Well, you can text it. And that's even easier.
Text it. email it. You know, like one of the things that I always ask when someone sends their kid over here is, does your kid have an allergy?
Yeah.
Because we have cats.
This is life-threatening.
Yeah. I love peanut butter. I would take a bath in peanut butter if I could. Right? But if your kid is allergic to peanut butter, your first thing is you say, my kid's coming over. My kid has a peanut butter allergy. I need you to take that seriously. Mm-hmm. And that is a perfectly responsible thing to do. Mm-hmm. And if somebody kind of blows you off, then you're not like, hey, okay, I'm going to send my kid over and this woman is bathing in peanut butter, right?
Right.
So I think the way that it, even perhaps more meaningful than what their answer is how they answer you tells you whether this is someone where your kid should be hanging out there or not.
Yeah,
and if you're not comfortable with the answer, you can say, you know what, why don't they come over here? Or why don't they meet at the park? If somebody's really rude to you, you can say, you know what, I'm sorry that this conversation upset you. You know, I'm happy for our kids to hang out at school.
Yeah.
And really know in advance what you're going to say.
And at the end of the day, does it matter if they don't like you?
No.
Not if you just kept your child potentially safe from an incident.
Exactly.
Oh.
I mean, it's real common sense stuff, but I think sometimes as women, we get caught up in this, like, I have to be nice, or what if they're angry towards me? You know, and the truth is, if you approach it from a perspective of, I'm not saying you shouldn't have guns. What you do in your house is your business. I would prefer that everybody store them safely. I am looking towards saving the most lives as possible. And if that makes me persona non grata, hey,
yeah.
I'll make a little t-shirt for it.
I think it's easy to get on board with anything that protects a child's life. I mean, I remember a few years ago, my oldest, I think, was in preschool when I remember seeing a lot of mom just bitching and moaning about the regulations on what we could send in for snacks at school.
Mm.
And I remember thinking to myself, these people have no perspective because they've never had a child who's been deathly ill because somebody gave them a cracker with peanut butter in it, for example, or something, you know? So I think everything comes with, it's not that those moms were awful moms or mean moms or didn't care about that other child. They weren't thinking through that lens. They were thinking, this is a pain in the butt. Now I have to, every time I'm responsible for snack, I have to go down this list. And they were not thinking from the perspective of, a child could die if I don't follow this list. You know, so I think everything comes from having a bigger perspective than just what's going on in your life. It goes to education. It goes to background. It goes to experience, what you're used to. And, you know, I hear so many people say, well, I grew up with this going on and we never died from yada yada. Sure. But that's not the situation anymore. And the reality is, this is the world we live in now. This is what we have to do to keep ourselves safe. And at the end of the day, do we really want to live in a world where we're terrified to leave our front door every single day? I don't think most people want that. And if we can strip some of the emotions attached to it for whatever reason, I have no idea why people are so emotionally attached to guns. I really don't. But that's not the environment that I was raised in. Mm-hmm. So I can't project my feelings on that onto other people. I have been really pleased to attend events and to be part of my local chapter and to be a part of the process. And we had an advocacy day just for anybody who's kind of interested in the types of things that Moms Demand Action does or do, whichever. We had an advocacy day at our state house. I mentioned I'm in South Carolina. We have a very high rate of domestic violence. I think we are usually between number one and three in the nation of women killed by their spouses or boyfriends. Huge rate of domestic violence, but we also have a huge rate. We had the Charleston 9 killed by the kid who went into the church and shot him up. We have guns everywhere. It's a big priority in our state to get this right for safety of women and children largely. But we also have a huge, huge, I mean, when the first time I went to a Moms Demand Action event, there were like 10 of us and we're standing there with our little signs. And the common reaction from the governor was a form letter that's thank you for expressing your concern. We're strong supporters of the Second Amendment. We'll never do anything to take away those rights. And we're just like, how do we have this conversation? As more school shootings happen and as more parents become involved, that's slowly starting to change a little bit. The last event that I went to, this advocacy day, had almost 300 people. So it was a big shift, which is good. But yes. What I saw us doing was trying to have a positive impact on the laws that are in place for safety, things that are not restrictive on personal rights, but make sense. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was very nice the way the people, it was African Americans and whites and Mexicans. And I mean, everybody across the board, ethnic wise, we all had this one thing in common. A lot of moms were there that had lost their children to gun violence because of gang activity or weapons that weren't stored properly and things like that. And to me, those are 100% preventable.
Preventable. Death. Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, really, I think what you're seeing is the power of us uniting. Mm-hmm. And we had also, I think this year in Wisconsin, we had also over 300 people at our lobby day. Last year, we had 20. Mm-hmm. We barely had enough people to hold our sign.
Right.
And there were a lot of people who were passive supporters of moms. You know, one of the reasons why I'm so vocal about the fact that sometimes I really don't want to go to a meeting. Like,
that was me.
You get to the end of a day and you're like, I just want to Netflix and chill, or I want to fill out a stupid personality quiz, or, you know, whatever else it is. There are 1,001 reasons that I don't want to be engaging with this, but I do it anyway.
Yeah.
You know, you have to get over your own self and your own self-interest in the status quo.
Well, and I think, I could be wrong on this, but I think a lot of people are scared because we didn't grow up in an environment that really preached or taught or even explained activism and advocacy, but certainly not activism. And that there is a certain civil activist and civil disobedience, as they call it, that is good for our country. And I think people get scared. They don't know if they don't like making phone calls. They don't know the process. They don't know the procedure. It's intimidating to think about going to their senator or their representative's office and having a conversation. And I also think that that's great that Moms Demand Action is organizing these events and breaking it down so it doesn't feel so intimidating, so that people are a little bit more apt to use their voice and follow the process. And right. I do, it was funny, two things here. My husband was actually, the day of the advocacy day, I woke up and I was like, I don't feel good. I have so much work to do. I have a headache. There will be other people there that can do this. But then I started thinking about that first event where there were only 10 of us. And two things happened. I reflected back. I do a lot of advocacy for the March of Dimes because my twins were born so early, and basically stuff that's happened because of March of Dimes saved my daughter's life. So I went to Washington for an advocacy day gladly. To me, that's like no controversy whatsoever, saving babies' lives, right? So it's easy for me to go up to Washington and talk to people. And what I heard said by multiple elected officials was, you can email us and you can tweet us all day long. You can post on your Facebook post about us. We don't care. It's not, my assistant is checking, my assistant, you know, 17 layers down, the high school intern is looking at my Twitter feed, you know. They're like, it's the phone calls and it's the in-person visits. When people care enough about an issue to call us or to come to see us personally, that's when we take notes. So that popped, exactly. So that popped into my brain and I was like, I have to show up if this is something that's important. But then my husband nailed it, put the nail in the coffin when he was like, his sentence was very simple. He just said, yeah, because posting on Facebook changes the world every single day. And, you know, I knew exactly what he meant because I had been so vocal on everything that I'd been sharing on Facebook and posting and posting and posting. And he meant, if this is an issue for you, if this is something you care about, you have to go down there and show up. And he is about as far from an activist about anything as, you know, an ant walking down the sidewalk. So for him to make a statement to me like that, it was really like, I was like, okay, I hear you. I have to go and show up. And it was peaceful. It was a wonderful event to be a part of. I got to sit in on a hearing, which if people haven't gone down, just across the board, if you haven't gone down and participated in lawmaking, it's eye-opening. And it really gives you a different perspective for what kinds of things are happening. And it matters. It matters. It impacts our lives every day.
It does. Absolutely. And, you know, this year is the 5th year anniversary of Moms Demand Action's founding, right after the Newtown tragedy, Sandy Hook. Mm-hmm. They were trying to find like some kind of a theme for this year. And I just happened to, for whatever reason, start using a hashtag. I made up a hashtag, expect us, which means I don't care. Well, it's, you know, the thing is that for so long, they have expected us to not show up.
Yeah.
You know, that we are either too intimidated by the lawmaking process or we don't feel like we have a voice.
We're just moms, right?
We're just moms. We're just moms. And what you see is when you show up to one of these things and then they pass out the red shirts and you can look around and you start to see this sea of red. You don't even have to open your mouth.
Right.
Showing up
makes
the difference.
It does.
Sometimes when people are like, well, what can I do? What's my one thing? Sometimes just physically being a body in the room and physically representing makes a huge difference, because then they look out and while they are sometimes doing things that you don't agree with, they have to look you in the eye.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And, you know, so it's important for us to challenge, but also, like you're saying, to have those conversations sometimes with lawmakers who do not agree with us.
Not at
and
all.
What you will see is that sometimes they feel threatened by us or by our organization, and you can have conversations. Sometimes the only thing that you can agree on with somebody is that the weather is crappy. You know what? Find whatever that one thing is that you can agree with somebody on.
Yeah.
You may disagree on everything else, you know? I mean, the internet is made up of disagreements. If you look at the, whatever that name thing was, Yanni or...
Right, Laurel or Yanni.
You know, Laurel or Yanni, or is what color's the dress? I don't care.
I don't care.
Everybody's wrong. But, you know, those kinds of things engage people in conversations. And so while they may be meaningless, I really think it's important for us to not be afraid to disagree with each other, because if we don't enter a conversation at all, that's when you end up with us being in these separate bubbles. And there are so many different kinds of things that we can agree on. Even to some extent, you know, even though I don't own guns, never handled a gun, there are a lot of card-carrying NRA members who will agree with me that we should have a better background check system that is kept up and that is meant to really take a close look at who is applying to buy a gun. We should also have background checks on every gun purchase. Mm-hmm. These are really relatively, quote unquote, simple fixes that can keep a lot of people who should not have guns from having guns. And these are things that, by and large, we can agree on.
Absolutely.
And if you don't agree on it, then you can have a civil conversation about it. You really can.
That's so true. And it's amazing to me, like, how quickly it can go downhill, because people get so nasty so fast. You don't have to walk away agreeing with each other.
No.
But be civil.
If we're going to have a discussion, we're going to have a discussion that is based on mutual respect and that is based on facts and that is not based on name calling.
Yeah, I try really hard when I am sharing something on any of these really controversial topics, that it be either stuff that I've gotten from Moms Demand Action, because I know that it's based on stats and people going in. I know it's not inflammatory And I know it's usually some type of call to action to make a change for the better. Mm-hmm. I will always post things from the perspective of the victim, because I think that's super important for people to see and understand. But in anytime I see something that looks like clickbait or that's, just obviously something that's going to make people angry just for the sake of making people angry, I try really hard to avoid that. But even so, I mean, it's unfortunate that people just automatically will like shut you down, just because your views are different. So I think it's important that we have conversations like this. And if somebody's listening to this podcast and they're like, you don't agree with anything we said, that's cool. You don't have to. Mm-hmm. And I hope that you'll comment and that you'll respectfully let us know why it is that you believe what you believe, because I always think it's important to hear things from all sides and all angles. And often it may not change my opinion on the subject, but often somebody will say something and I'm like, huh, I never thought about it from that perspective before. Doesn't change my perspective necessarily globally, but it makes me consider things from a little bit of a different angle. And I think that's an important element.
Yeah. And also, you know, really to encourage people, if this is an issue you care about, you know, no matter who you are, gun owner, non-gun owner, parent, non-parent, someone who is a native to this country or someone who has immigrated from another country, mm-hmm. to really try and look for all of the different sides, like you're saying, yeah. of the argument. You know, I research what position papers and all different kinds of arguments other people are making. They may not mean that I agree with them, but I can understand the appeal of them. You know, yeah. like you were saying before about gun ownership and, you know, people in some way fetishizing guns. There's a part of me that really can understand how people can feel insecure, you know, insecure, not necessarily as like, you know, I'm an insecure person, but feel fearful, yeah. For their safety. I certainly feel fearful for my safety as well. Mm-hmm. You know, and my children's safety. And this is my coping mechanism,
right?
You know, my coping mechanism is that, I'm not going to put my head in the sand. I know I'm a worrier. You know, you say one word to me and I am spinning off in space worrying about whatever yeah. eventuality. That's the great thing about being a Jewish mom. You just, you know, you give me anything and I will perseverate. But one of my coping mechanisms for doing that is making sure that I have good information and that I really do think it through and yeah. that, you know, that I don't demonize the other side. Oh.
Thank you so much. I encourage everybody, if you're interested in this topic and want to get more involved, don't be scared. One of the best things about Moms Demand Action is they make it super simple. And like Jen said, all you have to do is show up. They always provide talking points. So if you do want to engage in the conversation, you have a clue to what to say in a non-confrontational manner, but you don't have to. You can just show up and rah-rah, shish kumbah, you know, sing kumbaya with the masses. It's always a beautiful experience every time we get together because they're just wonderful women, but with the goal of making the world safer. I mean, who can argue with that as a mission? But we are so pleased to have had you on the show. This was a very long conversation. For anyone who stuck with us to the end, God bless you. And please check out our book. We don't talk about guns at all in the book. It's just a great tool for parents who are
just a very long hair.
Just a very long hair. That's right. You know, it's really a whole different battleground, and that is raising tweens and teens. And thank you for your time. Where can people find you? Do you have any closing statements that you'd like to leave us with?
So I blog on Facebook at Thinking Mom by Jennifer Rosenhines. And then I'm also the editor-in-chief of Moms Against Hate. We are going to be changing our name soon and turning into an organization that raises money to help women of color get elected. So thanks. No, and thanks so much for all that you do in bringing these stories together. I think it's so important that we all feel that we get to laugh and cry together and feel not so alone.
No, thank you.